Thank you, Chris. Thank you. So we set ourselves a huge challenge today, right? How can we affirm and promote the worth and dignity of those who seem to us to deny that worth and dignity to others? How can we connect with those who don't accept us or whom we don't accept? I hope you all heard Penny Rather's sermon on August 2nd. If you haven't, it's really worth listening to. It was great. It was looking at this just from the political point of view, that we talk about flying a rainbow flag over our church, accepting all sexual orientations. What about a red and blue flag? Are we really all Democrats here? As one person once said in a gathering, no. Could a Republican be welcome here? We welcome everyone, right? So she drew on Buddhist teaching, and she drew on Parker Palmer's Healing the Heart of Democracy, which if you haven't read it, is great. And then Chris Itano gave us a taste of another very helpful book called 12 Steps to a Compassionate Life. I'm going to add another book to the mix, the one that Chris has already mentioned. The Righteous Mind. The subtitle is Why Good People Are Divided by Religion and Politics. And I know that one service is not enough. Penny has offered to facilitate a group. Chris Itano hopes that a group will grow out of her sermon. I hope that there's a group meeting that will meet this fall that will bring all three of those books together and look at it from our point of view. I can only just give you a taste today to try to entice you. Because what, and all I can do is tell you what's been most helpful to me in Haidt's book, Why Good People Are Divided by Politics and Religion. I call this sermon, Connection Has to Start with Compassion. Well, the first thing Haidt did for me was to help me have compassion for myself. more understanding of the barriers in myself to connection. Chris just summed up one powerful barrier, the overwhelming urge to say, I'm right, you're wrong, here's why. I remember one time when I hurt a good friend by insisting on telling her why I was right. And when I realized what I'd done, I wrote a poem about it. I called it The Song of the Rightness Tightness. And here's how it expressed my surprise at why she should feel such pain at my proving her wrong. So it ended like this. That wasn't the point. I didn't mean to hurt you, but it happens. And the cry of pain is hard to hear. No wonder I had to stop my ears. Why did you have to ruin my song with your silly worry about being wrong? Why can't you just enjoy my rightness? That's the song of the rightness tightness. Okay? So how do we forgive ourselves and each other when this kind of thing happens? For the rightness tightness. How do we begin again in love? Haidt's been helping me see all the little ways I use my reason to establish my rightness. And what he's made a case for, what's so fascinating, is that from an evolutionary point of view, that's actually one of the reasons reason evolved, was not to find out what's true, but to prove that my truth is correct. The guy's a scientist, he's a moral psychologist, he's an atheist, he's very interesting viewpoint. And if reason evolved as a means of helping us prove we're right, that helps me see why not to trust my reason. That perhaps, just perhaps, my rational approach is just a justification for what I believe for other reasons. And so if I see that, and I also see, as Titus helped me see, that's a human thing. We all do it. It's why reason evolved. Just saying it's a human thing helps me have compassion for myself and anyone else who does it. And that can help with forgiving ourselves and each other and beginning again in love, as you said, over and over again at the beginning. So that's one small step, okay? But before we take on the challenge of extending this attitude to those who are so clearly wrong, here's a possible next step, okay? Rev Lydia has been challenging us to practice this kind of listening first in our own congregation. This humility, this deep listening, this not taking our own rightness so seriously. We don't all believe the same things. Can we confess to the beliefs we feel uncomfortable sharing? She's at the Living the Questions service on August 23rd. She challenged us to do that during the picnic. Go ahead, she said. Confess to a belief that you think everybody else in this congregation is going to have a hard time with. So I tried it. And I flunked again. I confessed that I was fascinated by accounts of near-death experiences and that I found the arguments that something real is happening there very convincing. As best I can remember, there was some reluctance to talk about this. So I asked, do you think that consciousness can exist without the brain? And one person answered with a strong no. Instead of listening to his perspective, I tried immediately to bring up the strongest argument I knew that it can. Fortunately, that got derailed. And I guess you could describe what happened next as beginning again in love, because that wonderful quotation from Einstein came up. I can't resist repeating it, because I think it's something where we all join together. Maybe some of you could even recite it with me. The most beautiful emotion we can experience is the mystical. It is the power of all true art and science. He to whom this emotion is a stranger, who can no longer wonder and stand rapt in awe, is as good as dead. To know that what is impenetrable to us really exists, manifesting itself as the highest wisdom and the most radiant beauty, which our dull faculties can comprehend only in their most primitive forms. This knowledge, this feeling, is at the center of true religiousness. In this sense, and in this sense only, I belong to the rank of devoutly religious men. And I remember we all beamed at the thought of those words, all of us. But wouldn't it be wonderful if we could explore our differing beliefs where it's not easy to beam together? If we could explore those patiently and lovingly. I've mentioned that our service is the last service of the summer with its focus on the first principle. But it's also the first service of September where our theme is invitation. Could we invite each other to that kind of group exploration? I think that's what Penny has in mind. Might it be the next step in learning to connect with those we don't accept? So maybe that's a challenge we could meet here within the congregation. But what about them, the ones who are so clearly, utterly wrong? They are the fearful and the frustrated. Did anybody see that article in the New Yorker this week? It's very good. It's about why people are for Trump. But, okay, that's them. They're for Trump. They are the fearful and the frustrated. They are the people who walk by a Black Lives Matter demonstration mumbling, "All lives matter." They are showing their lack of understanding of the real issue. They are showing their racism. I get that. I can sympathize with that perspective. But as long as that's where we stop, we're not going to be able to connect with them. As long as we're just showing what's wrong in their lives and their perspective. So, and in that, the packet of resources that we've been provided for invitation, I find hospitality means primarily the creation of a free space where the stranger can enter and become a friend instead of an enemy. So here's how Righteous Mind, the book by Haidt, helps me with that. That he is showing that those who espouse so many things we have trouble with are not just coming from fear and frustration. They're not just coming from misunderstanding. They're coming from a different moral matrix. That's his term. A moral matrix. He calls it moral foundations theory. And on the basis of a lot of analysis and a lot of research studies, he's identified certain moral foundations that we evolved as human beings to have. The one that is most important for liberals is the moral matrix that evolved because we had to take care of helpless babies. Human babies are much more helpless than any other babies. You've got to care for them for a long time. So you've got to have a strong, intuitive moral sense that you have to help and care for the helpless. And that is extremely strong in the moral matrix of all liberals, right? The sense of got to care for those who need caring for, right? We tend to think that it's not there so much for conservatives. But what Haidt points out is that it's not that that's not important to them, it's that there are other moral foundations that are equally important. Chris's father cared about, he was a caring person. He cared about kindness and all that. But he also had a very strong moral foundation of loyalty. And there are good reasons why human beings evolved to have that be a very strong part of their moral matrix. Loyalty to the country. So just looking at that perspective, I can't do justice, obviously, to the... just giving you a little taste of what helped me in the book. But to see that there's a moral foundation to some of the things that we have trouble with. And in that article in The New Yorker, The Fearful and the Frustrated, he didn't talk about moral foundations, but he brought out something that seemed to me to point in that direction, which is that one reason people are for Trump is that he has so much money, he's not going to be beholden to special interests. That's a reason we can empathize with. We can understand when we see what happens in the other direction. So, just looking at the moral foundations of the beliefs of people we have such a hard time with can, and recognizing that they all have a place in what it means to be human, might make it easier to listen, even to those we think are wrong. To listen deeply, to listen with a loving mind, with a sense of the inherent worth and dignity of the person we're listening to. To not stay stuck in "I'm right, you're wrong, and here's why." And when we do get stuck in it again, and we will, we will, when we do get stuck in it again, to forgive ourselves and each other and begin again in love.